When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, hey, another Monday night here at the Wolverine. Two-man booth tonight, Anthony Broom along with Clayton Safey in what is going to be one of our busier shows of the year. I mean, I wouldn't even be surprised if we run a little bit, quote-unquote, overtime, though we don't really have a set time limit, but we do have a lot to get to, and we want to make sure we get to all of it. But before we do that, Clayton, welcome in. Another busy day in the books for us.
Yeah, a lot to get to for Michigan football and basketball, so I'm excited.
Well, before we get into the meat and potatoes of our program, of course, we are brought to you by the Wolverines National Championship edition of our magazine. Of course, it's our hardcover copy right here. We still have plenty of them available over at thewolverineondemand.com. I don't know if anyone was keeping their eyes on social media this weekend, but we were photographed with a few Michigan players and giving a cut of our sales to the Champion Circle. Folks over there, I think we had a couple pictures out there with Chris Jenkins, Quentin Johnson, Michael Barrett. I'm forgetting someone. There was a fourth. Can you help me out there? Kalel Mullings was our fourth. So shout out to Champion Circle. 5% of our sales are still going to our friends over there. So be sure to get in on that. And then when they hand out the rings this weekend at the, you know, Jim Harbaugh comes back. He gets his tattoo, his 15-0 tattoo. But they hand out the four championship rings this weekend. And what's on everyone's table, right? You know, right tucked underneath the box where all the rings are. It's the Wolverine magazine and our national championship edition. So these are hot in the streets right now. You can get them online at thewolverineondemand.com. I believe I've seen some pop up. Dearborn Music has a stack of them, which was pretty surprising to me. They're also at the M-Den. I think maybe some Barnes & Nobles in the area have them as well, per sources. So yeah, get in on that. It's going to be a keepsake that you're going to want to hold on to for the rest of your life. And when they're gone, they're gone. We don't know if they'll ever come back. So be sure to get in on yours today. Again, head on over to thewolverineondemand.com. Well, listen, we have a lot to talk about in terms of spring game, and we are going to go position by position, but I'd be remiss if we didn't start off the show talking Michigan basketball and Dusty May, who, again, it just felt like, you know, if he just got that one commitment somewhere, anywhere, it was going to be an avalanche that started as they continued to build out this roster. And lo and behold, a couple days go by and Justin Pippen, the son of Scottie Pippen, a high school recruit, drops, a four-star guy, top 100 prospect, and five other guys join him on this roster. I'll list the names here. We've got Reuben Jones from North Texas, Danny Wolf from Yale, Trey Donaldson from Auburn, the point guard, Roddy Gale Jr. from Ohio State, just did something with our buddy Andy Backstrom, which is on the site now. You can check that out. And then Sam Walters from Alabama, a guy who has 3 years of eligibility remaining, along with the holdovers that are still on the roster in Jace Howard and Amari Burnett. We don't have official word what's up with them yet. So until we do have official word, we assume they're in the mix. And then also Will Cheddar, George Washington III, and Darrell Brooks. So Clayton, I mean, it has been a busy, busy few days. They now have two scholarship spots left, maybe more depending on some other attrition, but Dusty said he was going to put together a competitive roster that they felt like could win in year one, and still a few pieces to go, but it feels like they have that right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think with just this roster, you know, based on what they have, and it's not totally done yet. He did say on John Rothstein's podcast that they're close to being done, and that the additions will be more, you know, maybe just a guy who fits. And I think Vlad Golden, the big man from Florida Atlantic, probably figures into the mix here. I mean, I think we're just waiting on an announcement on that one. So, but beyond him, you know, it'd just be more guys that fit. You know, could it be Lorenzo Kaysen, a guard who was committed to Florida Atlantic and signed with them before backing out of his pledge after Dusty May left? He's between Michigan and Florida. Decision should come, you know, very, very soon on that one. as well. So guys like that, and then, you know, maybe best available. But I think with the roster they have right now, you know, this is an NCAA tournament team. I don't think there's any question about that. As long as they come together, you have a lot of new pieces you have to fit together. But it just feels like the right staff and the right, you know, players for, you know, that to come together and happen. So just incredible. I mean, Dusty May is absolutely everywhere, you know, from the recruiting trail to, you know, making sure that his staff is good to go. You know, they got five different assistant coaches now. He's also visiting fraternity houses. May or may not have been playing beard eye. That was not on video, but I wonder if he does have a little bit of a shot, little flick of the wrist there with the beard eye dice. He is everywhere, you know, and he told some of the, you know, students on campus when he was going around, he said, we're trying to build a team so we can end up in San Antonio next year, not just to be, you know, solid in year one. We want to win big in year one. And he's not just saying that, he's going out and doing the things necessary to make that happen. You have a point guard now in Trey Donaldson. You have a guy who can play point guard, you know, probably you come off the bench in Reuben Jones. You have a big guy in Danny Wolf. You could add another in Vlad Golden. You have a guard wing type in Roddy Gale from Ohio State. And then you also, you know, you add, you know, one of the more intriguing guys to me is Sam Walters. There's the video of Dusty, if you're watching on YouTube, going to the frat houses there. But Sam Walters is really interesting to me because he's a ridiculously good shooter. He's 6'10", a lefty out of Alabama that was a top 100 kid a year ago and can just shoot the lights out. He averaged 12.3 minutes a game last year, but made 1.1 threes per game on, you know, nearly three attempts. Like, he's going to get his 3-point shots off, needs to improve in other areas, but he's somebody you're going to work with, like you said, for a few years. So, I mean, each and every piece you feel pretty good about that they've added so far. Justin Pippen, you have Darrell Brooks coming in. So you do have a couple freshmen, maybe some more. But it's just pieced together really well. And like you said, I mean, we were waiting for that first commitment to come, but I think they had a great idea of where they stood with a lot of these guys. Like, they told a guy like Connor Asijan, hey, you know, don't bother coming on the visit anymore because, you know, we have some spots that we feel pretty good about, you know, potentially filled. You know, like Reuben Jones, I think, was committed for a couple of weeks before anybody knew. So they've just done a really good job so far.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing too is, we talked about this earlier, you know, off platform, in that it's not like, you know, you think of some of those early era, like Nebraska rosters where, you know, a guy like Fred Hoiberg is, you know, just rebuilding the entire thing with whoever will come, whoever's willing to fill a spot. And obviously after a few years, you know, it, you know, bears the fruit of what they've been the last few seasons. Where you look at this roster now, you know, the thing that strikes me about this group of guys that they've brought in before you add a Vlad Golden, before you add anyone else, is that Reuben Jones is the only guy that only has 1 year of eligibility remaining. So not only are you, and again, some of these other guys could pop and go to the NBA. And it's certainly, I think that's probably part of the pitch too, is that if all these guys do have good years and they get to the NCAA tournament or gosh, even make a run through the NCAA tournament, which I'm not, you know, I'm pretty comfortable saying, I think they'll be in the mix for one. I'm not ready to say they're a lock. I think there's a lot that needs to happen
before. Are they on the bubble in April?
Yeah, I'm putting them, you know, Joe Lenardi already has them on the bubble. I'm sure first 4 hours.
He probably does have a bracket out, which is crazy.
It's funny because he stops caring once the NCAA tournament starts. He just stops. He's like, all right, well, I'll be back next year to do this.
It just sounds like a miserable life, to be honest.
It is. It totally is. But yeah, I mean, when you look at what they've done here, it's not just an entire roster full of 1 year flyers. I mean, Sam Walters is a guy, 3 years left. Wolf, Donaldson, Gale, they could all be here for two more years. You know, if they add another high school recruit, that guy will be here for 4 years along with Pippen. So to me, I think he's done a hell of a job, man, right down to the assistant coaching staff he's brought in, to the roster he's brought into this point. And you know, now the work turns to getting him signed, and it looks like they're going to get these guys signed pretty quickly. Justin Pippen already officially signed. Reuben Jones, of course, already officially signed, which I have a feeling he's going to wind up being a favorite of ours. I'm kind of getting sort of a Chaundy Brown type of vibe with what he could be off the bench for them. So, or that's maybe he starts.
Yeah.
We'll see. I like it a lot so far. I mean, A plus. If you're someone who doesn't believe in giving out A pluses, give it an A. I think that they've done a hell of a job.
What's left for you in terms of, I mean, let's assume Vlad Golden is in the mix. You have a couple centers. I mean, you could play Danny Wolf at the four if you had to. You know, if a team goes big against you, I don't necessarily love him having a guard on the perimeter. Probably missing like that wing type. You could slide Roddy Gale over to the two. But if you get another guard like Aiden Mahaney out of St. Mary's, who has the tie with Justin Joyner, who's the new assistant coach, then I think Roddy Gale at the three works, because I do think that it's going to be a guard-heavy team. And by the way, I think they have seven guards on the roster now. No, actually eight. Like somebody on our message board at thewolverine.com said earlier, like, I didn't know you were allowed to have more than one or two ball handlers because they've been in that cycle the last few years where they just have not had enough. I mean, think of the Vanderbilt game in the NIT last year or 2 years ago now, you know, when they had Terrence Williams basically playing point guard at the end, they couldn't get the ball inbound. So it's going to be way different than that. I think it's going to be refreshing from that standpoint. But do you agree it's kind of a wing, I mean, another guard or kind of best available between wing and guard with, you know, if you get a Nelly Davis in a month after the draft process is through and, you know, he decides to come back to school or not back to Michigan, but back to college basketball, you know, or an Aiden Mahaney type who was just visiting Creighton over the weekend, but, you know, could be a possibility for Michigan.
Yeah. And it goes hand in hand too, since you brought up Nelly Davis. Liam Scott asks, Dusty May's cooking right now. Any truth to the rumblings about Florida Atlantic transfer John L. Davis being nixed by UM admissions? I haven't seen anyone. I don't want to take shots at anyone. I'm not super familiar with where the report is coming from. We just haven't really seen reputable people say that yet. So I'm not ready to call Davis to Michigan dead by any means, but it does seem like that buzz has cooled off a little bit, especially now that Michigan has, you know, maybe two spots left. And there's all of a sudden you go from how are you going to fill this entire roster to, wow, there's only a couple spots left. Like who, you know, is it going to be musical chairs? So I think I'm with you on, I'd probably lean more towards a wing. I really do think, and this might be controversial to some, I think there's room for like a Terrence Williams to come back if he wanted to. I think that's the type of guy that, you know, probably more of a three that could play the four in some lineups. The thing is like they're going to play a lot smaller. So these quote unquote guards, you're going to see play the three in some lineups. They might play the four. You know, when it comes to a guy like Roddy Gale and just talking to Andy, like I did a couple hours ago here, you know, there might be some defensive concerns with having a guy like him playing on the wing. So I think a wing is probably where I would put my focus right now. In terms of point guards, it's really just Donaldson and Brooks right now, right?
Yeah, Reuben Jones played point guard last year, so he could do it. Yeah. Probably not ideal, you know, given just his skill set. And, I think he'd be much better suited, you know, kind of being that Shaun D. Brown. I think that's a good pull by you earlier with that comparison. In terms of role and in personality and character, seems like a really good comp. But you know, there are guys that could do it. And it's, and to your point too, it's interchangeable with Dusty May. Like when you look at, you know, the guys like they had last year, I mean, all their guards were basically 6'3", 6'4", could bring the ball up, could create on their own. Elijah Martin, you know, Nelly Davis, you know, Nicholas Boyd, you know, they're all kind of in that same mold. So you know, what's a three, who's the two, you know, it doesn't really matter all that much. So I think that, you know, a wing would be good for defensive purposes for sure. But man, I'm making room for Nelly Davis. I'm making room for Aiden Mahaney for sure.
Yeah. And again, we talk about those fifth year guys like Burnett and Jace Howard. They have to be extended in an invite to come back. And we can't say with confidence that's happened either. So we'll see what happens there. A lot of spots still to fill in, a few spots left to fill in, but got the bones of, I think, a pretty good basketball. I think I can safely say not a Wednesday night Big Ten tournament team at this point. No. I mean, I think they'll probably be in that top half of the conference just based on the guys they have and based on the coaching staff they brought in. So any other thoughts? I mean, who are we looking to pop here next? I mean, there's going to be more. There's at least two more coming.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I mean, there's still some guys on the board that maybe haven't visited that might be able to come in. So I guess we'll kind of monitor that.
but it might be guys that you wait on a little bit, you know, like Nelly Davis going through the draft process. I don't think he's any rush at all. I don't think he's visited a college yet. I know there was the rumor he was coming to Michigan. That was fake news, you know, according to Jamie Shaw at On3. So and it turned out to not happen. So Jamie was all over that thing. But yeah, I think it might just be kind of a process where you go through it and you see if there's some interest out there. And you know, you kind of just kind of wait. I mean, you're not in a rush now. You don't have to feel pressured to go out and get somebody and fill spots. Cause like you said, I mean, there are a lot of spots that are full.
Absolutely. I'm excited to see it. You know, typically we don't, unless you just made a deep run in March, you know, we haven't really been super fired up about Michigan basketball going into the summer the last few years, but that is not the case anymore. I really like what they've done here. So, well, let's move on to the Michigan football spring game. That's going to be where the bulk of our conversation is today. And, you know, let's start with maybe overarching thoughts from the game overall, and then we'll get into the position by position of it. And we may have talked about this Saturday. I don't know, a lot has happened in the last few days, but I think I was kind of struck by it was a little more competitive than I thought it would be, without a ton of drop off when those second and third tiers of the roster came in. And again, that's not to say that they're just as good as they were last year, but when you have a lot of guys that move on and a lot of guys who didn't play or didn't play much at all, this is a wire-to-wire battle, and I thought we got a sense of, you know, even on the lower rungs of the roster, that they might have a little more here than we thought they did, and I was impressed overall.
Well, Orji got robbed at the end. I thought they should have let him go. I mean, Hayden Moore tags off on him, and we all know that ain't, you know, he was not in position. He was not going to make the tackle, and Alex Orji could have ran him over or at least just, you know, shedded that tackle had it been live. But also we have to point out that Alex Orji benefited from, you know, him not being live earlier in the game, because on his touchdown run, first touchdown of the game, you know, Ernest Hausman could have laid him out at the five and let up. He should have tagged off because he would have been down, but he didn't, which was his mistake and no fault of Alex Orji's for running hard to the end zone. But I guess that's just the way it goes. Yeah. It was, you know, an entertaining game, like you said, came down to the wire. You know, the blue team, I guess it was, led by Alex Orji, trying to come down at the end in score. It was weird not seeing Jim Harbaugh behind the formation. Very weird. Instead, it was Sharon Moore mixed in with Charles Woodson and Joel Klatt following around with you know, their microphones and everything. I thought they did a great job on the broadcast when I was rewatching it. But you know, as weird as it was not seeing Jim Harbaugh back there, it looked like a pretty similar product. I mean, we were talking the first play of the game, Michigan was in 22 personnel, Donovan Edwards, Max Bredesen at fullback, two tight ends, and they run Donovan up the middle. And I thought, you know, we'll get to the running backs, but I thought Donovan looked pretty good and ran hard. And it just didn't look that dissimilar from the product under Jim Harbaugh. When Sharon Moore has been asked about spring ball and in the spring game, you know, the things he talked about were the toughness, you know, physicality of this team. And, you know, that was on full display, I think, for you know, not quite 60 minutes, however they split it up, you know, 3 12s and a 15-minute quarter. So I thought that was pretty positive to see.
51 minutes? Is that how the math works?
I'm no there? Math. That's why I'm a sports writer. I need the calculator for just about everything.
Yeah, I think, well, maybe the conversation starts at quarterback then, because this was, I think, what we had heard down the stretch of spring ball, that this was more or less a two-horse race, and I thought that Saturday bared that out. Alex Orji got the first drive of the game and then the last few drives of the game. They did turn it over to Jaden Davis was his backup on the blue team, and then Davis Warren's backup on Mays was Jane Denegal. So they both kind of entered and exited and then re-entered the game about the same time. With Alex Orji, to me, the vision is apparent. Like, you kind of got a glimpse of the entirety of the experience of what it could be. I mean, he's a guy that I think if he winds up being the starting quarterback, you know, it changed, you know, it added, obviously adds a dynamic to your run game. You know, he can throw the QB option type of stuff in there. That's what he scored on in the first quarter, was a QB run where, you know, kind of fake handoff. But, you know, you see a lot of rhythm throws. What's that?
I thought that was a scramble, but
I was pretty, there was an option run. Maybe I'm getting plays confused, but there was a QB option run in there somewhere. Now I'm blinking.
I just thought because Marlon Klein was going out for a route, he could have had him. And then Marlon, I think, knew playing with Alex Orji all spring. He just Orji looked at him, didn't throw it. He just turned like, okay, he's running. Like, and then Marlon Klein had a nice block. But here's what I'll say about the Alex Orji experience. I think we got it to a certain extent, but we also didn't get him live. So it kind of held him back. Like, you know, I was saying earlier with the, maybe he benefited from not being live on that first one, but obviously would have scored at the end there. Like, there's that element of Alex Orji that we didn't get to see that I think makes him even more intriguing, even though we did see a lot of good with his mobility and everything. And then some shakiness as well with him throwing the football. But I mean, there's just that he does add something. I think it does something really well that you can't discount, which is running the football.
Yeah. I'm watching the play right now. And I mean, I don't know what the play call was on the field. I don't know if it was a designed read option or anything like that, but there was a fake handoff to Donovan Edwards.
Yes.
And then he kind of scrambles out. So regardless, I think you're right. I mean, it was, he fired high on a lot of throws, especially the ones down the field. The touch and the accuracy isn't quite there yet, but you know, you could see like if they're going to take a death by a thousand paper cuts approach on offense, which we know that they like to do. I think he's an intriguing weapon there. And, you know, I'll stop short of saying that he clearly showed his QB1 or anything like that. But, you know, when you look at his candidacy for the position, like I said, you can sort of see what they see and you see why he's so damn intriguing because he can't rip that ball. And when he does set his feet, when he's on time, it looks like it probably is supposed to look. So for me, I was impressed with him. Davis Warren, I think, comes out of this game as maybe the biggest quote-unquote stock riser, only because, you know, really all he did was run the offense and execute it at a high level based on the plays that were called. And that's kind of the baseline expectation for what a Michigan quarterback is going to look like. It's what made Cade McNamara very good a couple of years ago. It was the foundation that helped J.J. McCarthy take the step that he did over these last few years. And again, you can nitpick, you know, the touchdown to Kendrick Bell was against a walk-on defensive back that was,
I was going to bring that up. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think there's something to be said. Like Sherrone Moore and Kirk Campbell call good offense. So to just run the offense and not make mistakes and be on time, be on task, like, I was impressed with what we saw from him as well, because it was, I'll put it this way. I mean, there was a very clear tier between Orji and Warren and then what we saw the rest of the way.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I mean, Jaden Dennegal, obviously not his best day. You know, I'm sure he hasn't looked like that all spring, but, you know, he certainly didn't help himself at all. And I think he's clearly, you're running third or fourth right now. I thought Jaden Davis showed some flashes, and his best throw was probably an incompletion where he gave Peyton O'Leary a shot on fourth and seven and rolled out, kept his eyes downfield. I thought that was really good. And you can tell he can spin the football, as can Davis Warren, you know, as you were just talking about. He's always done that. I think that it is relative, like to a certain extent. When you look at a spring game, you kind of have to take things with a grain of salt. So like, yeah, I mean, Kendrick Bell beats Josh Nichols. Davis Warren throws a good ball into the wind, and it, you know, he put enough air under it and gave Kendrick Bell a shot, right? So he did his job on that play, and you can't fault him for it. You can't look away from that, as Jason Benetti said about some of the better plays during the spring game. You also can't put full stock into everything either. So it's tough to judge. And then you think about Jack Tuttle and how he's going to factor into the race as well. Sherrone Moore talked about that today. He said that he's got the talent, you know, and presumably meant, you know, the talent to win the job. And he said he's going to be in the battle. So, and Sherrone said today it's going to go summer into fall camp and potentially into fall. So today was, this weekend was kind of a glimpse of what those guys can do, a little more extended action than we've seen them throughout their careers, especially Orji. We've seen Davis Warren do well in spring games in the past. But, you know, you kind of come out of it feeling similar than, you know, how we came into it, maybe other than less sleeping on Davis Warren, because I thought he did a good job.
I think really where you come out of it is the idea that they're comfortable with working with what they have. And I think the starter in 2024 is going to come from what they have. Kirk Campbell, after the game, more or less said that portal quarterback's not something they're really looking at right now. And he doesn't necessarily anticipate that being the case. Now, could there be some back channeling going on? Could there be someone to jump in that hasn't jumped in yet? Maybe. And maybe that changes the conversation, but you get the sense that they're comfortable with what they have. And I'm not all the way there yet, but when you see how the guys perform, when you see how they run the offense, I think it's just, you see what maybe they're seeing and what they're hoping can be something that rounds into form. The other thing is that Davis Warren isn't a young guy. He's a senior. Alex Orji, this is his third year playing college football. Same deal with Jaden Denegal. Jack Tuttle, this will be his seventh year playing college football. So to a certain extent, like, I don't know how much more growth there is for those guys. Just hit on Jaden Davis. I mean, yeah, his most impressive play was the one that was that incompletion down the sideline to Peyton O'Lear. I mean, the ball is put exactly where it needs to be. Great play by O'Leary too, adjusting to it, high pointing it. Jair Hill just makes a better play. So
I thought he got there early. I'll say it. I thought Jair
Hill. You know, they ought to have us ref these things. You know, what's, you know.
I do not want to do that.
No.
Except Breon Ishmael got held. We'll talk about it, but Nate Afobe held him.
Yeah. Jaden Davis, he's going to have to put on a little bit. He's going to have to put on some weight. Game's going to have to slow down for him a little bit. I think that pretty content with just like kind of the slow burn development for him. You know, it's worked for Michigan in the past with guys like McNamara, with guys like McCarthy. But it's clear, like you can see the talent there, and he has a bright future, but it's probably more of a 2025 future. So I want to move next into, normally we'd go running back, but let's go wide receiver first, because I think this is where Michigan is going to add in the transfer portal. We've seen them in the mix for a guy like Kyle Ford. I'm sure there are other guys that they're either evaluating or are in on, and we're just not aware of it yet. But Fred Moore talked about it after the game with us. I mean, they have been running with five scholarship receivers most of spring football. And while that comes with the benefit of a lot of guys, especially guys like Moore and Samaj Morgan, these younger guys getting those reps they need to develop and take their game to the next level. You can't go into the season like that, because you are a tweaked ankle away from being in trouble somewhere. You're a hamstring pull away from being in trouble somewhere. And they still kind of lack that guy with, talk about Peyton O'Leary. You know, he is the long, maybe the big target on the roster, but I think they need someone a little more veteran. I think they need someone that's a little more proven than that. And it sounds like they're going to add those guys, but both Campbell and even some of the wide receivers on this roster, like, yeah, we need some help here.
Yeah, I think they need two or three guys to add to that room, and we'll see how their portal pursuits, play out. But, I thought we saw some good things from Tyler Morris early on in the game before he came out. He looked really good, as expected. Frederick Moore, probably had the best day in, I mean, the smile on his face after his touchdown, which is a pretty impressive play. He outran the defense. It was, like we said earlier with the Davis Warren play, some walk-ons out there. But regardless, he made the play that had to be made. You got to feel good for a guy like that, because it's interesting. They were talking on the broadcast, too, about Tyler Morris and how much confidence he got from that long touchdown against Alabama, where his teammate or his roommates, Will Johnson and Colson Loveland, keep playing that in their house. And, to get Timo fired up and keep his confidence up. So maybe that's the play that Fred Moore needed in the spring game to get him going. And I think he's a confident guy anyway. But, I thought that was a really nice play. He made some others. He looked really fast out there, really good dynamic. Samaj Morgan was pretty quiet, but we know he can do. And, you got to hope if you're Michigan, he takes a bigger step forward. But really beyond those three, you don't feel great about what they have. And like you said, I mean, there's going to be a guy that goes down. I mean, think of last fall camp. They had, you know, basically all their receivers were banged up to the point that Christian Dixon, who just transferred out of the program, was one of the guys that was being mentioned. And he hasn't done anything to impact in his career. So it is a concern, I think. And it's good that, you know, Kirk Campbell was pretty forthright about what their plan is there to pursue guys in the transfer portal. But this was a game where there were a lot of heavy sets, a lot of multiple tight end sets. You know, we saw Max Bredesen and Jalen Hoffman in there at fullback. So the depth was somewhat not as much of an issue because they just didn't play that many wide receivers. But in games, when you have your full squad together and, you know, you're going against Big Ten opponents, big time opponents, you're going to need receivers out there to change the game, you know, and make plays. And I think they need some more out of that position.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like their top three. I think Tyler Morris is poised for a pop this year. Frederick Moore, I think, is going to be a fine player. Samaj, I think there's a lot they can still do with him. But, yeah, it's going to have to they got to bring in a body or two at least. And I know you've got some freshman reinforcements coming in the summer, but it's going to take a big lift for those guys to be ready to hit the field as summer enrollees. Let's move to running backs. I think I have this in my notes here. Really, the biggest positive was that, again, adjusting for spring ball expectations, Donovan Edwards looked like vintage Donovan Edwards on Saturday. He's running hard. He's running through contact. The vision, the cuts were good. That was extremely encouraging to see.
He almost broke the one. If it weren't for Jair Hill getting the shoestring tackle, it almost looked like the Washington game, you know, where he bounces one out and had some room in front of him. But it wasn't even that play. As you said, like that was the most impressive, which isn't always the case with Donovan Edwards, right? The plays that were most impressive were the first couple runs of the game when he's between the tackles and he's running hard. You know, I thought his vision looked pretty good. So I was impressed with Donovan Edwards. And then, you know, I got to talk to him after the game as well and just impressed with him in general. You know, we've talked about it throughout the spring, but the way he's taken on a bigger leadership role, the way that he's kind of, you know, become more of that mature voice, not just within the running back room, but the offense and the team and as a whole, I'm just really excited for him going forward, going into this senior year. You know, he probably would rather be in the NFL or, you know, about to get drafted later this week. But I think he's pretty comfortable with where he's at personally right now. He's got the fire back. He talked about that earlier in the spring. And I think he's going to have a nice year. You know, Kalel Mullings ran hard too, didn't do anything crazy, but he's kind of a guy, which is crazy to say at this point in his career as a running back. Like, we know what Kalel Mullings is. And I think I'm sure he's improved. He just didn't get, you know, the opportunity to necessarily do anything insane out there on Saturday. The only gripe was in Tavier Dunlap looked solid, you know, but like he had 15 carries. I kind of wish we saw Cole Kmana a little bit more. I only clocked him with one snap on offense at least. And it was the end around to Fred Moore. He was in there on a split backfield set. He's still just an intriguing guy to me. I know he was banged up at one point during the spring. We got to see a little Bryson Cuzdahl, guy from Forest Hills Eastern. We got to see downhill Donahue. You know, Donovan Edwards earlier in the spring was saying he was giving a comparison for everybody. He said, like, you know, Cole Kmana is kind of like me. He said Kalel Mullings is kind of like Hassan Haskins. And then, you know, he keeps going. He gets down the list. He said downhill Donahue. Well, he's just downhill Donahue. And it's a great way to put it. He ran downhill, if nothing else, I thought.
Yeah, solid day of work for those guys overall. Again, looking at the box score here. Ben Hall had 11 carries for 33 yards. Donovan Edwards had 33 yards on just 5 carries. Who else here? Tavier Dunlap, 15 carries, 66 yards. He was kind of the bell cow of this game. So yeah, nothing to write home about in terms of running backs. But again, I mean, so much is dependent on what those two at the top of the depth chart look like. And like what you saw, at least on, you know, April 20th, tight ends, anything stick out to you there?
Yeah, a lot. They got a lot of opportunity in this game. I think it was 12 of the 23 receptions. You have the box score up, so maybe I know we're not good at math, but I think I remember writing that over the weekend. We wrote a lot of different things, but I think 12 of the 23 receptions were made by tight ends. They had a large role in this game on both sides just because, again, Michigan was going with a lot of heavy personnel, didn't use as many receivers, and you know they looked good. Marlon Klein was kind of the guy we were all – fixating on, and I thought he delivered in terms of the hype. You know, still has a ways to go, but was it last week that Steve Cassula said he's basically at starter level at this point? So it's him, it's Colston Loveland, it's Max Bredesen in that hybrid type of role. And speaking of Max Bredesen, just looked like Max Bredesen. He was incredible blocking. So that was good to see. And he's going to have a big role in this offense as well. You know, Zach Marshall made some plays. I think the only thing that, and Deacon Tonielli, by the way, too, I thought he flashed. He had the first kind of big play of the game for the Maize team. But the concern a little bit was that the tight ends might have been too involved. And again, it's a spring game, it's split squad. We'll see how it goes. But you kind of want to be able to push the ball downfield a little bit more. And that's on the quarterbacks and receivers and guys like Colston Loveland, who also played really well in his limited time to do. But that's just kind of a thought I had when watching the tight ends kind of eat on Saturday was, wow, this is very tight end centric, you know, with this offense. And that's a fine thing. Like, Michigan's always going to use the tight ends. As Jake Butt said during the broadcast, tight ends are always open in this Michigan offense. Kirk Campbell agreed with them during his interview. But, you know, you want to see a little bit more from the offense in terms of being dynamic.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do, too, with the fact that the offensive lines are split. We'll talk about them in a second here. The playbook, I mean, I think someone asked Fred Moore after the game, like, oh, do you guys feel like you could show more as an offense? He's like, well, we showed everything today that we've put in so far this spring. So, you know, if you feel like it's vanilla, it's because that's basically what spring ball is. It's more for the basic installs. It's more for getting guys reps. It's more for evaluation than anything. So the offensive philosophy will develop. I think if we just take the one game we saw Kirk Campbell call last year as, I mean, you take it as gospel for now. It is the only game we've seen him call plays. But, yeah, he's going to want to push the ball down the field, and that's something that I think we'll see, you know, with the benefit of time and more development for this offensive group. Let's talk about that offensive line. You know, still kind of working through my additional rewatches of the game. The thing that stuck out to me is that I know we've talked all offseason about Greg Crippen probably being this team's starting center. I think Raheem Anderson is one of their best five right now. I think Andrew Gentry is one of their best five right now based on what I saw on Saturday. Other than that, I mean, Josh Preeb didn't play. I don't think Gio Elhadi played, or if he did, it was sparingly.
He did not.
So we didn't really get a full sense of what that might look like, but I was impressed with what we saw. I mean, those guys, you know, as good as Donovan Edwards was right off the bat in that game, that offensive line was getting a fair amount of push.
Yeah, it was a good battle in the trenches, I thought, on both sides. And again, speaks to the identity that Michigan's going to have under Sharon Moore, which is very similar to what it had under Jim Harbaugh. And Sharon Moore was obviously a big part of that. So yeah, it was tough to judge, right? I mean, I think we all liked what we saw from Andrew Gentry, and he seems like he's in a battle right now at right tackle with Jeff Percy, who played right guard, right? So, like, we didn't get to really see what Jeff Percy's like at right tackle, at least this version of him, right? We've seen him actually start a game, I think, at left tackle against Rutgers a couple of years ago and have played at different points throughout his career, but it's a spring game. So it's tough to say the cohesiveness isn't there, the chemistry is not there, because these are not guys lining up, you know, next to the guys they're going to be lining up next to during games this fall. So it was tough to judge. But yeah, I think the centers, you know, Crippen got, you know, just a few snaps, but we got to see a lot of Raheem Anderson. So I think that may, I'm not calling you out, I just think that may cloud our judgment, because I agree, like, Raheem Anderson was one of the guys that we came in or came out of the game thinking, okay, he looked good in there. You know, and now he's a senior. We just didn't get to see a lot of Greg Crippen, so I think that could play a factor. Miles Hinton was in the same boat. I think he and Crippen both played like four snaps or five snaps or whatever it was. So they just kind of came in, gave them a few reps. But yeah, the O-line, you could definitely feel that they were bringing it. And same with the guys that were in on the D-line. I thought it was a good battle.
Yeah, not much to talk about there. Kind of a grade incomplete given the fact there were so many guys out. So let's flip over to the defense where, again, I mean, it's a unit full of known commodities, but defensive line in particular, like, we know Mason Graham is good. Kenneth Grant is good. We know TJ Guy, Derek Moore, Josiah Stewart. But to me, the most intrigue in this game came in the form of a couple, you know, someone who you coined as your guy, Breon Ishmael, who I thought was incredible. I mean, that he flashed a ton in that game. You know, they're going to need a fourth guy in that pass rush rotation. And right now it's between three of those sophomores, right? Cam Brandt, Breon Ishmael, Emerick Kumba had some good moments as well. You know, perhaps the, again, I think maybe my biggest takeaway on defense is perhaps the quote unquote lack of depth is a bit overblown in terms of not having guys to step in and backfill what they lost.
Well, I know Etta said so as well after the game. He said, you guys are going to feel stupid asking questions about the depth because you'll see in the fall and be surprised at what we have there. So of course, you know, he's a guy that's a depth guy right now. So him saying that isn't necessarily a surprise or something we should take a ton of stock into, but I do think that we saw more out of the guys that you kind of forget about on the defensive line than maybe we thought we were going into it. I mean, Breon Ishmael, like, I don't think he's my guy. I'm a Breon Ishmael guy. That's how I would describe it. And he made three great plays. Like, he had a huge hit on a TFL on Benjamin Hall where he just came flying into the play and you know, stacking him up for a loss of a couple yards. He had a pressure on the next play when Jaden Denegal should have thrown an interception to Jeremiah Beasley, the freshman linebacker. And I said this earlier in the show, but I think he got held on the deep ball. I think it was that play from Davis Warren to Kendrick Bell, if I'm remembering correctly. So he was really active and good. At the same time, I do think Cam Brandt is probably still pretty well ahead of him and Emerick Kumba as maybe the threes at edge. The thing is with Brandt is we saw him most of the day with his hand in the dirt, you know, playing kind of the big end spot. And that spoke to kind of what this game was about. I said it when we were talking about the offense, a lot of heavy sets, you know, 22 personnel, 12 personnel, that sort of thing, which led to a lot of three down linemen looks and a lot of guys on the interior of the defensive line that probably aren't going to play a lot this fall just because Benny was out, Trey Pierce was out, Kenneth Grant and Mason Graham barely played because we know how good they are. And, you know, so it kind of made it, you know, we get to see a lot of Ike Iwuna in that situation. But, you know, I think it was more about the edges to me. I agree with you. And I don't think we can gloss over either TJ Guy and what he did on Saturday. Yeah. Like, I thought he was really good on pretty much every snap, you know, had the first sack of the game. Had a third and fourth stop on Donovan Edwards where he only got 1 yard, you know, turns into a fourth down, which I think the Maize team got another stop on. So they were able to turn him over on downs if I'm remembering the right sequence, but I know it was a third and four where he stopped Donovan for 1 yard. So he did a lot of good. To me, it was Cam Brandt, TJ Guy, and Breon Ishmael kind of is showing he can maybe play some point down the road. On the edges, and then the interior was kind of an incomplete, as you put it, you know, earlier with the offensive line.
Yeah, and so much of these spring games, like, we're looking for something to latch onto for 2024, but you think about the guys that have flashed in spring games in the past, and it's really kind of like, okay, who are we going to be talking about this time next year? And I think it'd be interesting to see where guys like Brandt, Ishmael, and Kumba, and Oetta to a certain extent too, where they're all at in this pecking order when we're discussing what happened in last year or in the following year's spring game. So linebacker to me, it was extremely apparent right off the bat that Ernest Hausman and Jay Sean Barham are going to be just fine. I mean, I think Hausman steps into the Junior Colson role as the guy who is just your, you know, Mr. Mop up at the second level of defense, you know, just so stout, cleaning up the run, you know, cleaning up, stuffing the run. Hausman is so good there. And then as kind of that number two guy, Jay Sean Barham, you know, being a guy that could be shot out of a cannon to make an impact. Maybe you use him as a pass rusher in certain situations. I mean, those two are, to me, in addition to, I think Jimmy Rolder had a good day. I thought that the two freshmen, Beasley and Cole Sullivan, looked like they can be players in time. Again, another group where some folks were maybe concerned about the depth. I'm really not. I think they have two NFL caliber guys at the top of the depth chart. And I think you've got some guys behind them that would do pretty well given an opportunity to get in there.
Yeah. I think Jaden Hood looks solid as well. But yeah, Jay Sean and Ernest Hausman, Ernie, as we now call him, I mean, I thought they just the way they were moving around. Again, it was limited time, but I thought they looked pretty ridiculous. That looks like a pretty good duo there. I really do. If Jimmy Roelder can stay healthy, if Jaden Hood can be reliable, you know, and be relied upon to come in and make plays if he's called upon, then I think that they're going to be just fine. Can we talk about Cole Sullivan as just alone? I mean, he was awesome late in that game. And he was one of the freshmen, like, I think we were all most excited about when they signed this class. Like, he looked like an edge rusher out there. He looked huge, you know, tall and pretty well put together physically for an early enrollee as well. He makes two straight plays there towards the end of the game where he just comes flying in, like, just playing at a completely different speed than the rest of the guys that were out there. And again, it's all relative. Like, these aren't a lot of big-time contributors that were in the game at that point, but he was moving at different speeds. So I wouldn't be surprised if Cole Sullivan, like, you know, becomes a two-deep player at some point during his freshman year, kind of similar to, like, Jimmy Roelder was kind of pushing for that status a couple years ago and got in there, right? I mean, he was kind of the guy that would come in and spell Junior Colson for a snap here, a snap there. I think Cole Sullivan has that potential right away, and he might be too good to keep off the field in terms of, like, you may have to bring him in certain situations as a pass rusher too. Maybe I'm just drinking the Cole Sullivan Kool-Aid, but I was extremely impressed.
I'm with you. And I'm not making this direct comparison, but I do think you can put some stock into when guys look like you're playing, you know, they're playing Madden on rookie mode out there. They're just faster than everyone else. They're getting to the football. I think to a certain extent that does matter. And the comparison I was going to make is, again, it's not the exact same thing, but then again, maybe it might be. When we saw Mason Graham in the spring game 2 years ago, I mean, that guy was just at a whole nother level than everyone else. And that's obviously he played deeper into the game. So we'll see. You know, in an ideal situation, you're not breaking that glass in case of emergency where you have to throw him out there. But if he works himself into the mix, I mean, with what we saw Saturday, I mean, he's and I think they're very excited about him too. So I would not be surprised to see him, you know, surge for a spot and maybe play a little bit more than people are giving him credit for. I just remember when we went out to the Rose Bowl, you know, get the glimpse of whatever that with that 15 minutes of practice, and you're like, Sullivan, you know, he looks like a college guy. I don't remember him being out there, and then you come to it's one of the high school recruits that is enrolling early. So yeah, there's a lot to be excited about there. I think he's going to be a guy, you know, talk about these guys for next year, but he might be a guy that factors in somewhere this year, especially if there is a little bit of maybe attrition or injury stuff going on at the position. But defensive backs, we're never going to see a ton of Will Johnson, right? It's a guy that said, put him on ice, put him in a hyperbaric chamber.
Did he play two roll him plays? Out there. Like, yeah. It was like two roll, or three.
Roll him out there week two against Texas. Like, and that's fine. You know, interesting that, you know, that battle for the number two cornerback job right now, it looks like Jair Hill, DJ Waller. I think those would be the two guys I have ahead right now. And to be frank, I mean, the way that, that Jair Hill played on Saturday, again, I think that's going to be a battle that lasts into the summer, maybe even into the season. But talk about guys that mature and step up and are up to the task. I mean, he looked like a player out there, and that was encouraging to see.
Yeah, and I think Jaden McBurrows is probably in the mix there too. I thought he played well. You know, nickel and corner made plays. Jair Hill, I think, probably was the most impressive to me. I agree with you. And then DJ Waller made a couple plays in run support. Most of what we saw from the corners in this game was run support. That speaks to the larger point that I've hit on with a few different position groups here. Heavy sets, running the ball. You know, they were in nickel a lot less than they were in base, which isn't always the case. You know, throughout the course of a season, you're mostly in nickel, right? I mean, Mikey Sanders still and those guys hardly ever came off the field last year. So it was just a little bit different of a setup. I want to point this out too, just from a broader sense with the defense. Wink Martindale said on the broadcast, yeah, I'm not going to show everything. He was bringing, I mean, it wasn't him calling the plays. It, you know, he was the head coach of the blue team. And I think BJM, Brian Jean-Marie, was calling that defense. And I don't know who was calling it on the other side. I mean, they were bringing guys left and right, you know, linebackers. They were bringing defensive backs pretty frequently. Like Zeke Berry blitzed 2, 3, 4 times in this game and made an impact. And I know we'll talk about him in a second, but there were a couple corner blitzes. Like, if that's not showing much, I think that was a glimpse at, you know, what this defense is going to be like. I don't think it's going to be overly aggressive, but they were running some stunts and games up front as well. Like, there are going to be some exotic stuff they do. They dropped Derek Moore in coverage. He had a pass breakup on a Fred Moore target. So I guess that's a tangent of this defense is going to be able to do a lot of different things. But I agree with you on the corners. And I think that, yeah, Will Johnson looked very impressive jogging in for his three plays and then jogging back out and then coaching the rest of the day, because we know how good of a player he is, and he's only going to get better.
Yeah. Let's move to safety. Again, group is light on safeties right now with the Rod Moore injury. Quentin Johnson didn't play as he was working through something to bring that old bit back from Jim Harbaugh. Mekari Page played, but didn't play a ton. Brandon Hillman, did he not play at all?
He did not play. Nope.
Okay, so we saw a lot of Zeke Berry. We saw a lot of Jacob Oden. And then we saw a lot of walk-ons that I can't remember their names right now. Sorry,
I got
no offense, guys. What are they?
Max Reyes got the start for the Maize team. We had Nico Andraghetto in there. We had Shamari Stone in there. We had Micah Davis in there for the blue team.
All right, no offense, guys. I just don't think we're going to see a ton of them this year. But good they got out there. Good they got reps. You never know when you're going to need someone to step up. Yeah, I think to me, the conversation centers around Zeke Berry, someone who I think when you look at his build, when you look at, you know, kind of his profile coming out of high school, you know, he's a junior now, which is kind of crazy to say, time flies, does a lot of Rod Moore-esque type of things, which, again, it takes a special guy to be Rod Moore, but knowing that he's probably going to be the guy that steps into that role, or at least at the very least that third safety role, you got to be encouraged by what you see out of him. Really, that's two spring games in a row where I felt like you walk out of it with Zeke Berry being one of the more impressive contributors out there.
Yeah, and Zeke Berry is a football player in quotations, and as Jim Harbaugh says, there's no higher compliment that can be paid. But I thought that was just on display. Like, he was everywhere on defense, you know, the entire time he was in. And, you know, he made play after play. Like I said earlier, he blitzed a few times, was able to get in there. He looks like a guy just with his athleticism and his speed that can really play that nickel role. You know, no one's going to be Mikey Sanders still probably, right? But he might even have more physical tools than Mikey Sanders still. You know, and maybe especially at this point, you know, heading into his third year, when Mikey Sanders still was heading into his third year and he was a wide receiver. So he's ahead of the curve in that sense. I think they really like him. Sharon Moore didn't say much at his press conference today, but one thing he did say was that Zeke Berry was good. And then he stopped himself. He said, no, he was outstanding. And, you know, said that he's taken the opportunity and ran with it. So I would not be surprised at all if he's your starting nickel. But like you said, I mean, there's not much depth at safety, so that, you know, raises a concern because he's going to have to rep back there as well. You know, does that mean that Jaden McBurrows gets some reps at nickel too? I think absolutely. So it'll just be interesting to see how that plays out. But Zeke Berry, like, if he ends up being a starter and is as good as we think he can be, like, he might be one of the better players on this defense. Like, it, not just playable, but like a very good player. He talked this spring about how he's gotten better at recognizing formations and, you know, being able to understand what the offense is doing. If a guy tightens down in his alignment, you know, maybe it's a run coming here, that sort of thing that comes with age and experience. So if it can click for him, you know, I think the sky is kind of the limit. Maybe I'm buying the hype too much. Like, you know, I'm drinking the Cole Sullivan Kool-Aid and the Zeke Berry Kool-Aid, but man, I really believe it.
I don't think you are. I think if not for an injury in camp last year, we might be talking about him instead of Keon Saab.
Maybe we'd be talking about Keon Saab.
Yeah, well, that's true too. You know, Keon Saab, of course, now at Alabama. Last position group here, again, not too much to spend a lot of time on, but special teams. We didn't see any kickoffs or return stuff at all. You know, field goals, there's been some buzz. Maybe that field goal kicker is something that they're looking at in the portal. And which created a big opportunity for Adam Samaha to show what he could do. And he made, I think he was 1 for 2, missed the one. I forget what distance it was from, but
30.
It was from 30 that he missed. So something was just kind of off there. And I can't really put my finger on it. It kind of like, there's a lot of like, it just doesn't seem like there's a ton of velocity behind his kicks. And maybe that's something they're looking for, is a guy who can come in and drive the ball. You know, we've seen, you know, both Jake Moody and James Turner last year, you know, you put them in a game and those guys could hit a 50 yarder, a 45 yarder when you needed them to. And it doesn't seem like, again, we didn't really see him kick from this distance at all, but I don't know if Adam Samaha has that same juice. That's going to be something worth keeping an eye on.
I agree. You know, he misses the 30 yarder at the end of the first half. From our angle, I just figured it was good, right? It was close enough in, and then you see the refs, you know, signal. It's like, oh shoot, you know, he missed that. He did make the 31 yarder. I think both of them, and I know the 30 yarder was, but I think both of them were into the wind. But either way, that's a distance where you should be able to make that regardless of the wind. It wasn't overly windy that day on Saturday, even though it was, again, it was, you know, there was a wind. But
I think, you know, the thing that struck both of us is that the way the ball, it almost looks like he's punting the football, the way that it just kind of hangs up there, which is when you lend it to, you know, it lends itself to maybe on a windy day it gets pushed off course or something like that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It just didn't seem like it had that pop off of his leg. So our Chris Ballas has reported that Michigan is targeting a kicker in the transfer portal. So we'll see how that plays out. And as always, keep it locked at thewolverine.com for the latest. But just another thing worth noting is that Tommy Dolman was holding for Adam Samaha, the lefty. Mm-hmm. So that indicates to me that he has not been working at place kicker at all. And it's not overly surprising. He'll be the kickoff guy. He'll be the punter. Not necessarily his forte as the place kicker, even though he repped there last year in the spring before Adam Samaha arrived and James Turner came to the program from Louisville. So, yeah, we will keep our eyes peeled for kicker, but feel pretty good about Tommy Dolman at punter. He shanked the 118-yard punt. That was not great, but I don't, you know, I think he'll be fine. So,
yeah, it's like the Rose Bowl where you just know that sometimes it's just a bad day or a bad kick, a couple bad kicks. Like Tommy Dolman is going to be just fine. Any other fleeting thoughts as we kind of clean up here and maybe get out of here?
Not really. We've covered a lot. I think, yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to think like this was a pretty well-played football game, all things considered. I thought you saw the identity on display. I thought that, there are still some question marks when you look at the quarterback spot, a few others in terms of depth, but there's a lot there. And, you know, the Makari Pages and Colston Lovelands and Mason Grahams and all those guys, Donovan Edwards, you know, we only saw them play a little bit. So this was more about watching the depth. So it kind of gives you a clear picture of, okay, they need a wide receiver. Hey, you might want to look at a quarterback if somebody, you know, pops up in the transfer portal. You need a safety, maybe, you know, a couple defensive backs, you know, in total. So, I think it was a good, you know, a good day of football for Michigan and, you know, a good measuring stick for some of those guys that got their opportunity.
I think something I had said earlier today during a radio hit that is maybe my biggest takeaway is I came into it thinking that, especially with the quarterbacks, that it might be a spring game that kind of mirrors what we saw in 2015, where it was just kind of nothing. And then you're waiting on Jake Rudock to come in the summer. And I walked away a little more encouraged than that. Again, obviously we don't know. I don't suspect there's any help on the way. I think that the solution is going to come in house, but, I think all in all, I come out of it feeling slightly better. I still, you know, people are going to ask and we're going to start production on a football preview here soon, which is going to be weird because it'll be the first one I've done where maybe you don't have that same level of expectation, like the ones we've done the last few years, but I'm still kind of looking at this team as a group that, you know, you're hoping can maybe get to 10 wins. You want to beat Ohio State. You want to compete for a Big Ten title and you want to get into the 12-team playoff. I'm not putting the bar at, You know, I don't think this is a national title squad yet. I mean, the story, there's a lot of things to figure out before then. And I think they have a chance to be very good and you know, elite on defense. But I don't know that what I saw Saturday changes those expectations a ton, other than I think I'm a little more comfortable with the idea of an in-house option at quarterback. And also some schedule notes too. They did officially announce Saturday, the Texas game in week two will be Big Noon Saturday. That will be a maze out at the Big House. And then they're going to do a stripe out, which I don't think they've tried a stripe out before, Clayton, for that USC game on, what is it, the 21st? Whatever it is, 21st, 28th, week four. They're going to do a stripe out week four, which I think is going to be pretty interesting. Other than that, I'm excited. I mean, I look at this schedule and it's kind of, you know, it's daunting, right? But daunting is, you know, is exciting when you think you have the pieces that can come together and compete. And knowing that maybe a loss or two somewhere isn't going to kill you anymore.
I agree. So
that's my long-winded ramblings as we do every week towards the end of the show. But you can like this video, subscribe to the YouTube channel if you're watching live for more. We'll be back a little later this week. Maybe a couple more Dusty May additions to talk about. We got an NFL draft in Detroit this week. Michigan looking to set a record. That's going to be a quasi infomercial for this program, which should be a lot of fun to try and get down there. We'll see what happens. What's that?
Rich Eisen's going to have fun on that broadcast.
Oh, you know he is. I'm looking forward to it, man. It's an exciting time to be a football fan in the state of Michigan. A shout out for the Detroit Lions, too, who went to jerseys with block numbers. Real football teams wear jerseys with block numbers. I'll die on that hill. So for Clayton Safey, for our producer, Megan, behind the scenes, I'm Anthony Broom. Thank you guys so much for giving us an hour of your Monday nights here, or an hour of your drive, whenever it is, if you're listening after the fact. We'll talk to you again soon.